Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kathleen O, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, October 14th, 2019, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 60, the third paragraph, Being Convinced, reading through two paragraphs, ending with More Likely to Have Varied Traits. We'll be commenting on those two paragraphs. Today's readers are Marge E., reading the 12 steps, Athena B., who will be reading the 12 traditions, and the readers of our text are K.P., Leslie M., and Sandy D. The share ID for Sunday, October 13th, special edition, is 13,513. That's 13513. And for this morning's October 14th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time is 13,515, 13515. Our newcomer greeter for today is Mo H, and Reggie O will be making the announcements at the end of the meeting. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I'll now ask Marge E. to read the 12 steps, please.
Good morning. This is Marge E. from Massachusetts. The 12 steps. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for your service, and thank you for letting me do service, and I pass.
Thank you, Margie. And Athena B., would you read the 12 traditions, please?
I would be happy to. Good morning, everyone. This is Athena B. from Northern California, and these are our traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me do service, and I pass.
Thank you, Athena B.
You're welcome.
How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study. We're in the Big Book on page 60, the third paragraph, which begins with being convinced. We're reading through two paragraphs ending in more likely to have varied traits. We'll be commenting on both those paragraphs. So good morning, KP. If you could get us started, please. Star one to unmute, Kay.
I'm sorry about that being late. I had to unmute. This is KP from Malden, South Carolina. Being convinced we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. The first thing I would like to share this morning is the line about God as we understood Him. That is so important. I think it is absolutely wonderful that OA does not care what religion or spiritual path you follow, as long as you acknowledge a higher power and turn your will and life over to that higher power, this plan will work. The second paragraph is about running the whole show. I never knew I did that before, but when I was working these steps, I saw how controlling I wanted to be. I wanted everybody to do things my way, and I really had to give that up. But I kept thinking I knew best. And what I had to come to realize is that it didn't matter if what I thought was the right thing was the right thing. The problem was that it was not my job to control this. I had to learn that lesson. Thank you for allowing me to read and share, and I will pass.
Thank you, KP. Okay, who else would like to share on these two paragraphs? Page 60, the third paragraph. We're doing two paragraphs here. Who would like to share on those two paragraphs?
Rob. Jackie H.
John D.
Donna B.
Audra J.
Okay, I have Roz, Jackie. There was someone after Jackie and before Donna B. and Audra J. It sounded like
John
a man,
K?
Maybe. John K.
John K.
I got you,
Jordan
John
L.
K.
Reggie O.
And Jordan.
Very
Jordan
good.
L. Okay, let's stop there. Jordan L. and Reggie. Okay, so I have Roz G., Jackie H., I'm going by memory, that might be wrong, I'll double check it. John K., Donna B., Audra J., Jordan L., and Reggie O. So go ahead, Roz G. Are you there, Roz? Did I not hear Roz?
Yes, I just had to get unmuted, I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry, okay.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. Okay, good morning. I'm Roz G., and I'm a compulsive overeater from Palmdale, California. And my second program is Al-Anon because I'm a manipulator, a mother, and a manager. And, you know, that ties right in with my my OA, you know, with my me, you know. I can relate to both being the nice, patient, you know, manipulating my way through life by being so kind and so patient and so generous and, oh, you know, doing that salute, you know, I'm sacrificing so that, you know, I can, everybody will be nice and love me, you know, and then, yes, I can also, my kids told me, you know, when I did my amends to them that you're mean. And some of the things you say are very insulting and cutting. So I can relate to being on both sides of the coin. And I didn't even realize that that I lived by, you know, through self-will, through that selfish and self-centeredness was who I really was until I worked the steps. And I like Hollywood. I like movies and theater. And I lived a lot of my life, you know, being a chameleon, living, you know, whatever group I was in was, you know, trying to conform to their ways so that I could be accepted and liked. And, you know, eventually got to a place where I didn't even know who I was, you know, just basically eating television and anger, you know, living in fear, living on all of that, and program the steps have given me a personality, likes and dislikes, and not being ashamed of them. And saying, you know, when I do have an opinion, I can say what I mean what I say, and not say it mean. And that comes with accepting others and who they are. And that takes a lot for a selfish, self-centered person who wants my way. So thank God for step 10. And for partners in the group to help me see that they have the right to be who they are, live and let live. And I have the right to be who I am with God's grace. And thank you, I pass.
And thank you, Roz G. Okay, Jackie H., you're up next, followed by John K.
Good morning, Kathleen. This is Jackie H., recovered in Colorado. Thank you for your service. And wow, I just have always, you know, I didn't like this section too much at the beginning, but because it showed me who I was without a higher power. And you know, I have this human spiritual malady that I think I can live autonomous from a higher power. And it has manifested itself in many, 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 many ways and many addictions. And finally, when I came in here a year and a half ago, I got really serious because my life wasn't working very well. And the food came back up. But, you know, I got abstinent. I got put the food down. I got a sponsor. I went through the steps. And as a result, oh, my gosh, the transformation that has taken place. But what this whole section just, it shows me that, like I said, that I have this spiritual malady that I think I can live autonomous from my higher power and that I can play God. And, you know, I've done that. And, yes, everything about this, I was always in collision with something or somebody. And you know what? It was never my fault. It was always their fault because if they would just do what I wanted them to do, I would be happy. But you know what? I wasn't happy even when they did what I wanted them to do because I was trying to fill this hole that I thought was there by arranging, by managing, trying to manage the life outside of me to fit me so that I could be happy and so that I could be soothed. And it didn't work. It made a mess of my life. I made a mess of so many relationships. And you know what? Again, I just as was already mentioned, I am so grateful for step 10. That is, for me, that step 10 and 11 is where the real transformation is taking place, continues to take place in me because I get to go to a deeper level. And I never thought I was mean-spirited. But you know what? I can be mean-spirited, even if it is in my head. And God is showing me all of these things, and in such a loving way, though. You know, I used to beat myself up so bad, and I still want to on occasion. But I'm just grabbing this program, and I'm so grateful that I can see myself. My selfishness, my self-seeking, thank you. And that I don't have to beat myself up and that I can move beyond it. So thank you for letting me share, and I'll mute now.
Thank you, Jackie H. Okay, John K., it's your turn, followed by Donna B.
Good morning. Thanks for your service. This is John Kiernan, recovered compulsive eater in Los Angeles. You know, if you want to teach somebody why they should change, it's always a good idea to show them the negative effects of not changing. And that's, I think, what this paragraph does. You know? And remember, this paragraph was like the first one that impacted me when I first came back into the program, you know, back in the Jurassic era. I was only in the program a few weeks, and we'd been reading the book, and it seemed like blah, blah to me at the time. I mean, I wasn't in good shape mentally. But then when I hit this paragraph talking about the actor who wanted to run the show, boy, it hit home. And not only did I identify with being that person who wanted to run the show, but I bet you it was a part of me, I don't remember, but it wanted to, like, rewrite the paragraph because I thought I was a better writer than Bill, you know? I mean, I was a sick puppy. But to me, this program is getting me ready to consider turning my will and my life over to a power greater than myself. And it does it by asking an important question of me, you know? How's your way been working so far, Sparky? And the reality was it wasn't. But I think for a lot of us, we came from dysfunctional households, and turning it over requires a certain amount of trust. And in my house, you know, a child of alcoholics, control was essential. It was almost a matter of life and death with me, you know? I mean, at certain times in my childhood, I think it probably was. And I also came from a household of narcissists where self-will and self-seeking was modeled for me, you know? And when you live in a home full of, like, me-first people, you either become one of them or you sort of get shoved to the side of the road, you know? And the thing was, turning it over was such a tough concept for me to grasp, you know? I later came to flip it around based on something I read in the AA 12 and 12. Instead of thinking of it as the act of turning it over, I went with a little bit more passive action of just thinking of it as removing the blockage of self-will. You know, things don't always have to go my way. But, you know, this concept's hard. It asks us to reverse what's inbred in our DNA, you know? Self-preservation, self-concern is a driving force of like all animals. You know, I mean, for all I know, I'm descended from some caveman who shoved his best friend in front of a saber-toothed tiger so he could live, you know? And also, we're asked to put our self-will on the shelf in a world where no other people, other than 12-step people, have to do so. But you know what? We have to. If we want long-term recovery, then somebody living with that stressful life described here in these paragraphs at some point will want to relieve that stress. And we all know how that works, right? And so at the end of the day, I think these things program tells us to do, while they're self-sacrificing in the level of the life we have to live on, they actually serve a selfish end to keep us abstinent, sober, clean, whatever. And most importantly, they keep us happy, joyous, and free. I'll wrap. And if not, at least some serenity, peace, and acceptance. And a person who's in that state of mind doesn't want to do deliberately self-destructive things like compulsively eating. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, John Kay. Okay, Donna B., you're up next, followed by Avara J.
Good morning. This is Donna B., recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic, calling from Denver, Colorado. What strikes me in these two paragraphs is that the word convinced is the leading suggestion in the first sentence of both paragraphs. First of all, we're being convinced that we are at step three. Not that we have to take step three just yet, but we're at step three. Because we have admitted in the ABCs that I am a compulsive overeater and cannot manage my own life, that probably no human power is going to relieve me of my obsession, and that C, this higher power could and would if I made a commitment to seek that power. So I've been convinced that I'm at step three. And then, worse yet, there's a requirement that I have to be absolutely convinced that any life run on my self-will can hardly be a success. And I look back at my life and the roles that I played in all the scenes and in all the drama. And I think about the ways in which I tried to make change, the ways in which I tried to make my life feel safer for me. And I can see, I can be absolutely convinced that when I am motivated entirely by my own thinking, by my own acting, by my own compulsion to protect myself, to preserve myself, shield myself from the pain of rejection, assault, neglect, abuse, my life is not going to be a success. It's going to be a mess. And when I see and accept what a mess I've made, not because I'm bad, but because I've been hurt and have developed coping mechanisms, which I'm slowly beginning to accept at this point, have expired their usefulness. Step three looks very, very appealing. The opportunity to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. So I'm turning over my thinking, my acting, to something that I don't understand, that I don't have a relationship with, that I haven't developed trust in yet, but my fellows are telling me this power cares about me. And the direction that I get from a power that is not human, that is capable and caring, can direct my thinking and acting in a way that is significantly better than my own thinking that comes out of a dysfunctional and abusive home. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna B. Okay, Avara J., your turn, followed by Jordan L.
Good morning, everyone. This is Audra J. from California.
Sorry, Audra.
That's okay.
Go ahead.
it took a lot of years for the food to convince me to, and it's a phrase that I use that means so much to me, do what is suggested. And a number of 24 hours ago, a number of years ago, one more time, trying to control things, and I really didn't know I was trying to control anything, unless I really got honest. One morning, I asked God one more time for help, thinking about turning my will, those are my thoughts, turning my life, that's probably my actions and behavior, to recommit my third step and do what is suggested. And in the beginning, my path was very wide. It started with, of course, putting down the sugar and eating three meals a day. And then it has grown from there. I picture a wide lane and deviating from the program, the steps 10 and doing all the footwork. It didn't hurt so bad. But as I grew closer and deepened my relationship with the higher power and worked hard and had faith, I can't really explain what's in my heart. The path, especially step 3, became more narrow. I had to do a lot more than just abstain and three meals a day. And it has grown with working the steps. And step 4 showed me just how much I'm trying to control things and how very critical I am of my fellow brothers and sisters. The path became more narrow. More is expected of me because slight deviations affect me more, because first and foremost, they affect the closeness I have with the higher power. That gets my attention more than anything else. And it keeps me doing what I'm supposed to be doing, getting back on track with a 10-step. I'm just so very grateful for this phone meeting and for OA, for God and abstinence. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Audra J. I'm sorry about your name. I couldn't read my own writing. Okay, Jordan L., you're up next, followed by Reggie O. Go ahead, Jordan.
Good morning. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing this morning. I think this is Kathleen. Good morning, you guys. My name is Jordan L. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Gunnison, Colorado, and very grateful to be on the line with you guys this morning. So being convinced we were at step 3, and I think, if I remember correctly, someone mentioned this on Friday, but the original manuscript for that said, if you're not convinced, like, don't bother going forward, and not in a mean way at all, but very much so, by the time I get to this point in the book, I'm pretty convinced of those first 3 propositions of steps 1 and 2, right? that I am for lack of a gentler word, screwed. I've been trying to manage and control the food, and I've been attempting that desperate experiment over and over and over again, and it's just not—it's not working. By the time I got by the time I got back to OA, and and I got on the line and I started listening to this meeting in particular, a big book study that demonstrates the practical aspects of this program. I didn't really have to be convinced. Like, what was being spoken about in Bill's story and There Is a Solution, more about alcoholism, like, I had lived those things in my life. I had experienced them. So when I got to step three, it was like, okay, the only thing that I really needed convincing of was that self-will can hardly be a success. And that was a tough one to swallow, because I thought it was the only, instructions that I had been given for life thus far. So to imagine that there was something outside of that was quite the feat, especially with how hopeless I was after being convinced of steps one and two. So I'm glad that you guys were here to kind of hold my hand through all of it. That's all I got this morning.
Thank you, Jordan L. And before we take Reggie O, just a reminder, we're on page 60, the third paragraph that starts with being convinced, and we're reading through two paragraphs ending with more likely to have varied traits. And I'll be taking some more names after Reggie O. So go ahead, please, Reggie O.
Hi, thank you, Kathleen. Thanks so much for your service this morning and everybody who's serving this morning, being on the line, reading, and all the wonderful shares. I'm very gratefully recovered in the Los Angeles area and just loving hearing and reading these paragraphs this morning. They just get better every time through. Being convinced we were at step three. That's a pretty big word, you know, being convinced. And someone else also said this, that we are at step three. We haven't taken step three at this point. But step three is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. And the first requirement, you know, it's kind of like the must in the book. I read them. The first requirement is that we be convinced the new life and our self-will can hardly be a success. And, you know, as I look at this paragraph, it's like I've learned, hopefully, up to this point. I have now, after many years, but after taking steps one and two, I've learned that I can't do it anymore. You know, I can't run my life on self-will. But this gives me, it gives me ways to see what that self-will looks like that I might not have otherwise thought about. You know, it's like, so I'm looking up here at the top of page 61, and it says, in trying to make these arrangements and trying to be, you know, run the show as an actor when that's the director's job, in trying to make these arrangements, I can be virtuous, kind, considerate, patient, generous, modest, self-sacrificing, and I can be the opposite of those, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But in some ways, you know, they all fall into the category of dishonest and self-seeking motives. I used to be judgmental about those. I feel very compassionate reading that this morning, you know, these dishonest and self-seeking motives, which look kind, which look generous, which look mean, which look selfish, because, you know, that's not who I or I believe any of us naturally are. That's who we learn to be. And these steps teach us to unlearn and get down to that core, you know, truth, I believe, of who we are. And when I read this time, and I've been thinking about this, boy, what a relief it is when I am and would be when I do this, you know, more and more, to be the actor. You know, there are millions and millions and millions of people on this planet. I'm one. We're each actors. We each are here to play a part, you know. And when I can just play my part, when I can do be the best actor that I, you know, and do the best role that I was given to be and do, it's like my shoulders relax. I think about it. What a gift that is to think that I can do that, you know. And I'm not like burning up my energy, wearing myself out, trying to do the director's job, you know. And just even learning that I have a director, you know, that I've come to have that conception of
time,
God.
Please.
Yeah. I have to give it over to this director. Thanks. Yes.
Thanks, Reggio. Okay, who else would like to share on these two paragraphs?
Michelle.
Nadia B. What's this? Nadia B.
Deborah G.
Deborah G. Bruce E.
Kendra S.
Kendra S. Okay, I'm going to stop right there. And Michelle, so I have Michelle, Nadia B., Deborah G., Bruce E., and Kendra S. And Michelle, if you could give me the first initial of your last name, and we're ready for your share. J, thank you. Okay, go ahead, please.
Good morning, everyone. Michelle J. from Arkansas, recovered today by the grace of God. You know, what these instructions mean to me, I love, love, love that a year into program and into recovery, you know, more will be revealed. So I hear this and these instructions, you know, my question comes into my mind, who do I want to run the show? Who do I want to be in the driver's seat? Who's in control? I mean, I could tell you all the reasons why I'm a controlling person. I kind of owned all that, you know, I kind of grabbed it. That's how I lived. But today more has been revealed. When I hear that question, I hear, how badly do I want to give up my control today? And when I think about that, I think, badly. I really want it badly because I know that if I do this, I want peace and joy. And I want to be full of gratefulness and love and generosity and forgiveness. I want this so bad. And then I can pour it out to others. And I'm like, yeah, I badly want God to be in control. So when step three comes into mind right now for me this morning, it's just this severe reminder of, once again, how badly do I want all this? Bad enough to give it up, it all up, every bit of it, and turn it over to a power that I know can handle it. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Michelle J. Okay, Nadia B., you're up next, followed by Deborah G.
Thank you. Good morning, fellows. My name is Nadia B. I'm gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Connecticut. I love this paragraph. So many years I've struggled with understanding it. And I think sometimes I still do. And it says that, you know, in order to take step three, there are also, you know, it's a definition or it's a conclusion of the mind, but it does have requirements. You know, I love the comparison of that stage character of an actor and director because it helps me with understanding what I've been doing. And, you know, I've been playing my own script and it's not going so well. So the requirement is for me to resign from a directing role. And, you know, if I could guys do this myself, I would. You know, I was convinced at some point and still am today that, you know, I still am actually, you know, when I do my 10-step turnaround, every time I do it, I am I am to ask myself that question. How has it been working for you, Nadia, so far? How is it working to be the director of this situation, this show, this script that you've written? And, you know, when I'm doing my 10 steps, I'm really, you know, I'm really convinced. I'm looking at the situation soberly, and I'm seeing that it's a mess. It's unmanageable, and it brings me to all this work that we've done so far, you know, and I think you can't take this step without the previous two. That's why, you know, this program is so wonderful for me because it really helps me get to those places where I truly, truly understand, not just in my mind, but it is the knowledge that is transferred to the core of my being, to the soul, to the heart of my soul, and in understanding with my heart and not with my brain. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Nadia B. Okay, Deborah G., you're up next, followed by Bruce E.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deborah, recovered compulsive overeater. And thank you so much, all of you, for your service. And thank you all for your shares. To be reminded again, because I can so quickly fall into that human condition, what that's describing on here. In fact, I have a little thing on here that says, well, all those last things with the, you know, the egotistical, selfish and dishonest, you know, all the human conditions. And that really helps me, too, to not be hard on myself, because it's going to happen. It's going to come up. And it happened this weekend. I worked this weekend. So Saturday, things went really well. I think it was because I wasn't in self-will. And I love when that flows like that. I feel really good when I leave. And then Sunday, I made the mistake of getting into self-will and putting myself out there and saying something that was open for argumentativeness, which is a mistake to do in the work that I'm doing with the people that I work with. And it just got the ball rolling. I got the ball rolling and all this stuff. And then was talking with another person one-on-one, going back and forth. It's exhausting. It's exhausting to do that. But, you know, when I was in it, I felt like I was driven. And that drivenness I learned was my ego. My ego. I just felt driven by my ego. And, you know, it didn't feel good at the end. And at least I have the awareness of my part in it. And I learned from it. And I can do it differently. You know, I get to start over. Like today, hearing this, I get to start over again. And I'm so grateful to be here. And that's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you, Deborah G. Okay, Brucey, you're up next, followed by Kendra S.
Okay, I think it's Bruce E. If it isn't Bruce E., come and stomp on me here.
It is Brucey.
Oh,
you have
thank
the floor.
God you're not going to stomp on me then. Okay. If I get online, just stomp on me. This is Brucey, and I'm just very grateful to be on this line. I'm recovering in North Carolina. It's a little windy where I am here. I hope that won't interfere with the call. I want to look at that second paragraph. First requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Well, I was just looking at that, thinking about that. Ever since I can remember in my life, early childhood, I always tried to run my life on self-will. Man, is that hard to break. And the pain that it costs me over all these years of self-will. It's been a painful life of living on self-will. And then it goes on to say, can hardly be a success. Well, I was just looking back on my life here. And so I found a higher power in 1938. Not that old. Anyway, at 38, found a higher power. But how much of a success was my life after that? I ended up with a good wife and good family and a good job and a car and a house and all that. But how successful was my life? I was going back into food. I was falling into the food. And I'd have to say as long as I was going back into the food, which I did for years in the program, I wasn't a success. I wasn't successful. Because if I'm going back into food, not only have I got that problem, but I've got the problem of feeling guilty and all that. And so my life isn't as successful. And I need to be sure I put down the food, be recovered. Then I think, really, I can say, well, I'm a little, you know, I'm a success. And, you know, when I was into the food, if somebody would have said to me, how successful are you? I probably would have said, oh, I'm successful. And then they say, well, did you put down the food? No, I didn't put down the food. Oh, well, then maybe you're not successful then. Yeah. Boy, that would have hit me in the head, wouldn't it? on the basis we are always in collision on this, on that basis. So when I'm doing self-will, on that basis, we are always in collision with something or somebody. And even now, you know, recovering and on a food plan and doing pretty well. Think I have a grasp of a higher power to a pretty good degree. Still got a long ways to go. I'm still in collision with people. I find myself, if I'm with my wife for an hour or two, hey, we get along real good. Things go great. But how about if I spend a full day with my wife? We get in collision. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And I pass.
Thank you, Bruce E.
Yeah.
Okay. Kendra S. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. This is Kendra S. and recovered in North Carolina. And I've actually been quite hesitant to share myself as recovered because I keep thinking that I'm not recovered, even though I've had 4 months, I've worked through the steps, but I keep waiting for the food to pop up because I've been in relapse so long. And I realized this morning it's time. It's time to say I am recovered and to trust that process. So thank you for letting me share this morning. And these two paragraphs are exactly where I'm at. You know, I have often said that I came out of the womb in charge and certainly acting. I grew up in a classic dysfunctional family. I was the oldest and, you know, it was their fault. They put me in charge. I was set up to run the show. And then in my career, I consequently became a manager. So that's all of this is called when you run the show, it's called being a leader. And that makes it quite virtuous for me. Well, that doesn't work anymore. And I'm finding that I'm kind of in an identity crisis because if I'm not running the show, who am I? And it's been very scary to me because that has been my identity, to truly be in charge, large and in charge. And it's true. The more I was in charge, the larger I got. And today I'm very humbled. I was, you know, listening this morning on the line and I was thinking about this and I thought, wow, what a relief it feels like to be outed in these two paragraphs because I justified it by being kind, considerate, self-sacrificing, martyr. Look at me. I'm in charge. I'm going to run the show. I'm going to tell you what to do. And it strikes me that it says life would be wonderful. And I'm realizing that I'm in the midst of changing that definition of a wonderful life. To me, the wonderful life was when I was in charge. And that's what I got the high off of. And that's how I felt better than. And that's how I, you know, knew that I mattered and had value by putting you in your place and telling you what to do. And then on top of it, I even got paid for that. And today, I humbly submit that I am ready to not be in charge, so I don't have to be large. And as I was walking my 80-pound lab this morning, and she veers off, and I've got the leash, and she's pulling and wanting to smell everything, and I've always been, like, I get irritated. My morning starts out pulling her and saying, come on. And this morning, it occurred to me, just relax. And I stopped, and I just said, you really like smelling those things, don't you? Very gently to her, and she stopped and looked at me. And then she just came right along and we walked our merry way and she didn't stop again. But when I would pull her, there was a resistance. And that's what I've experienced with people, a collision, because I'm demanding, pulling their chain, yanking them here, yanking them there because I know what's best. And I just thought that was such a picture for me this morning, walking her, how calm she became after I just gently, you know, waited till she did her thing and then we went along. So thank you for letting me share. Have a blessed day.
And thank you, Kendra S. Okay, thank you everyone who shared this morning. It was really a great meeting. And I want to give a special thanks to Team Monday, Marge E., Athena B., KP, Leslie M., Sandy D., Mo H., and Reggie O. And we are now going to close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So Leslie M., would you read a vision for you, please?
Good morning. This is Leslie M. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. You should be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. I pass.